Several months before my father died, I visited him at the apartment he shared with his second wife on West 96th Street. It had been a long, hot ride uptown on the subway. The sun was shining through the window as I faced him, its warm rays settling on us as we talked quietly. My throat ached as I fought back tears, thinking of the inevitability of pending loss. He didn't need his gold and sapphire stud set anymore. It was a part of his life he no longer could lead. My fingers went over the tooling of the metalwork and the coolness of the deep blue stones. This feeling of a last goodbye would replay between us in the months to come as my father's body gave in to his enlarged heart and weakened lungs. Dad told me how much he loved me, making a difficult moment sweeter. He was always very private with his thoughts. When he summoned his strength, I helped him off the bed and walked in front of him in case he should fall. It would hurt, but I'd rather he fell on me than hit the floor again. This time it really might kill him. The last time that happened, I stood over him in the ER at Mount Sinai and directed the plastic surgeon as he rebuilt my father's nose. It had been crushed when his 6-foot frame fell face first to the floor after he lost consciousness, flattening his nose. The surgeon immediately asked for a photograph. I didn't carry one in my wallet, so I pointed to my nose and told him to copy it exactly. They were identical. Though the operation was not for the faint of heart, I volunteered to stay and hold my father's hand while the doctor realigned his features. As the doctor began the reconstruction, he pointed out each aspect of his injury. At one point, he pulled up a broken white band and showed me a severed artery. He said that had my father not been found in time, he might have died from the fall. As the surgeon manipulated my father's nose, I knew Dad would remember none of the experience later. At the time, it reminded me of moving a piece of furniture into place, a little to the left, a little to the right. It was a remarkable moment, and my very vain father was forever thankful that he didn't wind up looking like Rodin's sculpture of a man with a broken nose. All of that money spent on a Beaux-Arts education was finally put to good use. I didn't let the surgeon stop until the shape had been restored to a hair of what it had been. It was always about 1/32nd of an inch off. The surgery left a faint scar down the middle, but my father never got over how great the result looked and would often tell the story of how his daughter, the artist, helped a plastic surgeon restore his nose. As he walked to his suit closet in the makeshift office, his lips pursed together, he let out a little whistle through every labored breath. He said, "I want to give you something." While he opened the door to his closet, I took a good look at the books lining the rosewood bookcases that had once lined the library at my mother's apartment in Greenwich Village. I made a mental note of where my favorites were kept. I'd always felt proprietary about them. Someday, these would be mine, and I would cherish them, as he had. Atop the bookcases were his old radios, each design more modern than the last, a timeline of sorts. He reached up to the shelf above his suits and carefully removed a green metal file box from his army days. "Here, you may as well have these," he said, and handed it to me. Having never seen the box before, I had no idea what was inside. I opened it and coughed, choking on the dust that coated the exterior. There were letters and newspapers that gave off the musty odor of history. When I leafed through the letters, I saw that most were in French. Over the many months to come, I began the painstaking process of archiving them and sorting through the newspaper articles and photographs that told his story. It would be years before I would begin to translate those letters, but a title came to mind immediately. If this were ever a book, I would say. On a late summer afternoon, several years later, I lay on the couch, dictionary in hand, struggling to translate a chapter of a manuscript written by a friend, an Italian writer. If I could give his writing an English voice, I would be invited to translate his whole novel. For whatever reason, where sometimes only fate can lead us, I felt I was translating the wrong person's words. I crossed the living room and picked up one of the hundreds of letters that I had so carefully archived, then bounded up the stairs to the computer. Try, I thought, just see what happens. In contrast, the words flowed like water from a faucet. I found my voice. It was my father's. Jews on the run in war-torn France in June of 1940. Surely the situation surrounding my family had to have been more terrifying and damaging than my father let on. The weather had warmed. The heat was already intense during the day. They had no choice but to continue. They couldn't go home. As they scrambled to safety under their car,